Today, Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Nandam. Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pracharani, Nirvishesha Sunyavani Pustitani Satani. I'll begin by telling an incident that took place during a Srimad Bhagavatam class that I attended in Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan. The class was on a verse about Gajendra's prayers in the 8th canto, chapter 3, first verse. This is one line from that verse. The verse is Sri Bhadarayana Kuvacha Evam Vyavasito Budya Samadhaya Manoradi Chajapa Paramam Japyam Prag Janman Yanushitam. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Thereafter the king of the elephants, Gajendra, fixed his mind in his heart with perfect intelligence and chanted a mantra which he had learned in his previous birth as Indradyumna, and which he remembered by the grace of Krishna." In the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that everyone should learn a mantra, a Hare Krishna mantra, or he says another mantra he recommends is Chintamani or the Sringa Stotra, so that you can be saved at the time of death, or even you can remember it in the next life. So, then after the lecture, when there was questions, one question was whether we can say our own prayers that may come to us spontaneously, or should we only say prayers like the prayer of Gajendra written in the scriptures. So the person giving the lecture said he thought both could be given. But there was a lot of interest in the topic, so another devotee wanted to speak and said he didn't think that we, the devotees, should say personal prayers, because to pray to Krishna you had to be very qualified, so it's best that we just use the shastras. And then another devotee gave still another opinion that our prayer should be to chant the holy names. That is the prayer that we should chant either exclusively or above all others. The devotee giving the class then recommended that if we do chant the Shastric prayers, one time to do it is as recommended in the Nectar of Devotion. And that is here. It says that, according from the Sringa Purana, any person who comes before the deity of Lord Krishna and begins to chant different prayers is immediately relieved from all the reactions of sinful activities and becomes eligible, without any doubt, to enter into the Vaikuntha Loka. So, at the time, for myself, when I heard this discussion, I had wanted to hear more about personal prayer, but I agreed that the different points that were made were valid. And I began to think about it some more, all these different forms of prayer and what they had in common. And what they do have in common is what I want to talk about in this course. Therefore, you see, we're talking about all this kind of prayer and that kind of prayer, Shastric, personal, and the holy name, as well as other. So I want to introduce a definition which will include them all. It may be that we tend to think of Vandanam, which is one of the 9 processes of devotional service, as reciting prayers from the scripture. In a narrow sense, we may think of it like that. But a broader definition that I will use, prayer is something that occurs when we break through the material coverings and actually speak to Krishna or actually chant the holy names. I repeat again what I said. Well, actually speak to Krishna, in this case, actually pray the holy name, or actually enter the spirit of the shlokas, which are prayers as written. Speaking of defining prayer, we can look at the dictionary also, as Prabhupada sometimes did. And in the Webster's that I looked up, I've got this definition: to address God or a deity, especially with devout petition, to request something fervently, to implore. So these are nice definitions, even from the dictionary. Then it goes on to say, a formal set of words used in praying. That would be a definition of Shastric prayer. An earnest entreaty. These words, earnest and fervent, also imply what I was giving as a definition, that it's not just a formula, but when you actually enter a certain quality of doing it, that it becomes prayer. We won't even talk about prayer unless it becomes to that state. And the dictionary seems to support that, referring to it as fervent and earnest. And then in the dictionary we find a definition which is carries the agnostic attitude, and it says prayer is a minimal chance or hope. In common speech, prayer is something negligible. All you have is a prayer, a wing in a prayer, other expressions like that. And Srila Prabhupada would sometimes define prayer or give us ideal expressions of prayer. There was one exchange where Prabhupada was talking to a minister, and the minister said that it's difficult to know what to pray for. And Srila Prabhupada said, we should pray to Krishna, please let me love you. So in bhakti yoga, everything is concerned with loving service. So prayer is, as Prabhupada said on that occasion, please let me love you. And there are other prayers that Prabhupada has given us. Please give me the strength to serve you. So now, I want to consider today Shastric prayers. That means the sections in the scriptures, especially in Srimad Bhagavatam, where somebody's making prayers. They usually are called a stotra. They're also called Uttama Shloka, that the Lord should be prayed in beautiful words. Now, actually, you'll find a large percentage of the total Srimad Bhagavatam is made up of such prayers. And they're usually made when some devotee is having a direct darshan of Lord Vishnu. And just to give you a sampling, here is how frequently they occur. We have prayers of Queen Kunti, whole chapters are named after prayers. The prayers of Queen Kunti, the prayers of Bhishma Devi, Brahma's prayers for creative energy, the prayers offered to the Lord by the residents of Jambadweep, Hamsaguya prayers, Prahlad pacifies Lord Nrisimha with prayers, prayers of the demigod for Lord Krishna in the womb, the prayers of Akrura, and many, many others. They are prayers. So what are the Shastric prayers? They are actually, we call them Shastric prayers because now they're preserved and written down. But originally they were personal prayers in almost all cases. In some cases, like the Hamsaguya prayers, the person Daksha, he wanted to pray to the Lord, so he selected a Shastric prayer, a prayer that was already in existence from previous acharyas, and he recited that. But we don't take it that these prayers are put in the Srimad Bhagavatam as literary conventions, meaning just ways to express the philosophy by the author of Vyasadeva, but they're actually taken as recordings of moments in transcendental history when, for example, Dhruva Maharaj saw Lord Vishnu, and this is what came out of his heart. And this is what Prahlad actually said. So they were spoken in inspiration, but they're so wonderful that now they're preserved for us, and we can repeat them and make them ours. Oh, regarding that, you asked a question. I like to invite people to write questions in addition to at the end of the class when I take questions. Anytime you have a question, please write it down and pass it forward. And even if I don't deal with it in that class on that subject, it will be helpful. And at least we'll deal with it. The whole last class is just for that. So please do that. Don't feel shy. Even if you don't wish to raise your hand, you can write down questions or say, could you talk about this, or you had something you would like to talk about. Now, another thing about the Shastric prayers is that one has to be empowered to pray to Krishna. These prayers, which we find in Srimad Bhagavatam, to be in the level of Srimad Bhagavatam, Uttama Shloka, is not anything ordinary, it's not sentimental emotion. So the point, one point is that they're empowered. And there's a statement of that in Prabhupada's purport. He says, there are many instances in which even a small boy who was a great devotee of the Lord could offer excellent prayers in the choicest words for glorification of the pastimes of the Lord. In other words, without the development of fine affection and love, one cannot offer prayers to the Lord very suitably. We saw that Dhruva Maharaj, when he saw the Lord, he couldn't speak at first, but Lord Vishnu touched him with his conch shell, and then he was empowered, able to speak. Another point is that Krishna declares that he is the inspiration for these prayers. In fact, you could even say that it's Krishna who's praying through the person. And that he is the inspiration is stated by the Lord himself. After Lord Brahma prayed in the third canto, Krishna said, O Brahma, the prayers that you have chanted, praising my transcendental activities, and your firm faith in me, all these are to be considered my causeless mercy. So Krishna takes the credit for the Uttama Shlokas that come out of his devotees. By his desire, they can speak like that. These Uttama Shlokas, they also, within the Srimad Bhagavatam, convey much of the philosophy. We get an education in God consciousness and Bhakti Yoga by studying them or by reading them. And we also understand what is ideal devotion. Now, after just a little introduction to what the Shastric prayers are, I want to go into this list of categories of prayers, because I'll be referring to this in the other lectures also. It's just a way of getting to analyze the different elements. It's just what I came up with by looking at them, and they're very general categories. So just to give us a feel of these components, I want to give examples of Shastric prayers for each of these, so you'll get an understanding of it. Then tomorrow, when we talk about personal prayer, we'll understand how we can use them in our own thinking. Praise is the first one. So when a devotee comes before the Lord, he worships him, or he prays him, praises him. And for an example of that, we have the prayers in ecstasy spoken by Arjuna. It's an example in the 11th canto when he was before Lord Krishna in Vishwarupa. O Great One, greater even than Brahma, you are the original creator. Why then should they not offer their respectful obeisances unto you? O Limitless One, God of gods, refuge of the universe, you are the invincible source, the cause of all causes. You are the original personality of Godhead. You are the supreme refuge. O Limitless Form, this whole cosmic manifestation is pervaded by you. It's very clear that he's in a state of great ecstasy, and so he's speaking his appreciation in extraordinary language for the inconceivable personality of Godhead. And this is probably the most prominent category of expression in the Shastras under prayers. Of course, this is at an unusual intense pitch that Arjuna is speaking, but even when they are more deliberate philosophical descriptions, they're praising Krishna's greatness, that he is above the three modes of nature, that the three modes of nature come from him, or his greatness is being estimated, although it can never be fully estimated. So the prayer of praise, it has no request for something from the Lord, and it has no reason except this loving, a very free emotion that comes. It's very natural because this God is great and we are small, so prayer should be praising Krishna. So that's just an example. And praise.
That's from the 11th chapter.
Yeah. Starting with verse 37. Thanks. Prayers of thanks. I'll just mention sections. I won't read a verse for this one. When Prahlad Maharaj was before Lord Nrisimhadev, within his prayers, he thanked the Lord for sending Narada as a spiritual master. He was very grateful to Krishna. And grateful to Narada for saving him. Queen Kunti thanked the Lord for the bounty that was within their kingdom. All this nature, the rivers are flowing, the mountains are full of minerals, and all this is due to your glance upon them. A real thanksgiving prayer. for the bounty given by the Supreme. Lord Bhisma thanked the Lord in a very personal way for appearing at the end of Bhisma's life. So this mood is just the opposite of prayers that are actually made by demons, which are so self-serving. But actually, these are prayers of thanks. The next is the prayer of requesting needs. Now, in the ordinary mind, this is sometimes the sum total of what prayer means. You ask God for something. Whereas it's certainly not the sum total of Srimad Bhagavatam Vandanam. Vandanam is a way to please Krishna, to serve Krishna by this method of reciting. But when we read the dictionary, that was the first definition. However, in Srimad Bhagavatam, the devotees also, although they may mostly make praise of the Lord and description of his glories, they often have a request to make. There are different kinds of devotees, sakama, akama. The sakama devotees have material desires, but they are very pious and they go to Krishna. So in their relationship or in their prayers, they are asking Krishna, whereas the akama devotees don't. I heard Prabhupada on a tape, he was talking about the Pandavas, and he said, they never prayed. And he was meaning, not that they didn't glorify Krishna, but in this sense of the word. And he said, a devotee, no matter what difficulty he is in, he'll never pray to Krishna. Because we know what he means. He means they won't ask Krishna for material relief. Not that they don't pray. They're constantly praying to Krishna, glorifying Krishna, serving Krishna. But not this requesting of needs.
So, excuse me, like when Sankirtan will be harassed by a demon, like it's not so elevated to say, Krishna, please get rid of this guy.
I'd like to deal with that in a separate question, with a separate question, so I can keep the flow of this going. But it's a good question. One request that is made without any material tinge is the prayer for pure devotion is sometimes asked. If anything is to be asked, devotees ask for that. So that's an expression of a request. Lord Brahma asks it in his prayers in the 10th canto, 14th chapter. And often that's asked. Or Lord Chaitanya's Shikshastakam, Nadanam Najanam Sundarim. It's not just negation, I don't want anything. But he wants loving service to Krishna. If we had no request, then there would be no prayer. Well, at least let's say if there's no person and no desire for exchange with the person, there would be no prayer. I remember reading once that a prayer by Shankara, the great impersonalist, in which he said something to the effect that please forgive me for praying to you because I know you're not really a person. So what Prabhupada says, their expressions up to the absolute truth, the Brahma Supreme, are like that. They're more like insults. They're painful to Krishna. Oh, you who have no head, oh, you who have no leg, oh, you who have no form. It's like saying, oh, you blind, crippled person, non-person. But Krishna is there, and although they don't want to ask for material things, they ask, may I just be your devotee life after life? May I associate with the devotees? I'm sure you, many prayers like that come to your minds when you think of them. And then there was a mixture in a prayer of Vaikajendra of both material and spiritual Gajendra, in the jaws of the alligator, prayed for immediate release as well as liberation from samsara. He said, "May that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is unlimitedly merciful, bestow upon me the benediction of liberation from this present danger and from the materialistic way of life." Prabhupada says that the devotees, they prefer not to ask Krishna for things, but sometimes they're forced by the helpless, they're in helpless condition, so they call out to Krishna, their only friend. But they regret that if they're calling for some material relief. Dhruva Maharaj, he asked for a material benediction, and then he regretted it very much, that he had prayed to the Lord for a material benediction. There's another prayer where Queen Kunti prays that she please be released from attachment to her kinsmen so that she can just worship Krishna wholeheartedly. And I think in the purport, Prabhupada says, the devotees don't like to ask the Lord for things, but sometimes the householders are in have a particular need, and they ask Krishna. And he was referring to that family attachment that she had, and she just didn't want it to be in the way of her devotion to Krishna. So this is the main other requests are usually not made except for the request to be engaged in the devotional service. Prayers asking forgiveness. And in the same section of Arjuna praying to Krishna, he says, "Thinking of you as my friend, I have rashly addressed you, O Krishna, O Yadava, O my friend, not knowing your glories. Please forgive whatever I may have done in madness or in love. I have dishonored you many times, jesting as we relaxed. O infallible one, please excuse me for all those offenses." So, that's a very intimate prayer, asking to be excused from offenses. But there are other prayers where there really are more overt offenses, and we come to Krishna asking to be forgiven for our offenses. Lord Brahma, he asked to be forgiven for his offenses on a number of times, and so he has prayed in that way. Really, Vadika, I think you have a nice little phrase of his memorized. You were telling me once.
Lord Brahma says, "I thought I was in control for so many years, so please forgive me for that particular offense." And then he goes on to explain that your mercy is equally manifest when you punish and when you forgive. But in this case, please forgive me instead of punishing.
Because I'm your servant, you can forgive this little offense. The way the mother forgives the child who's not yet born and the child is kicking in the womb. So I've given you some kicks and I'm sorry, but please don't hold it against me because I am your servant. He asked for forgiveness. Kali, and then on the 10th canto also, 14th chapter, which is one of the best stotras in the Srimad Bhagavatam, very glorious for many reasons. Brahma's prayers to Krishna after he stole the cows and calves. He also says, "How presumptuous I was to do this to you. Please forgive me," to try to test your potency. The wives of Kaliya, they apologized for their husband and said, "Please forgive him. He's an offender to you." Prahlad also asked Lord Nisringa to please excuse his father, Hiranyakashipu. So this is a brief application of these categories to the Shastric prayers. I like to make these classes as practical as possible, a kind of workshop in how to pray. So the question should come up around this point that what do these Uttama Shlokas have to do with us? How can we apply them other than study them? If it's true that you have to be very qualified, I even said that one devotee said we should only pray these prayers, but how can we get into them? or how can they be part of our lives? We are not on the battlefield with Kurukshetra seeing the universal form and with our hair standing on end, glorifying Krishna. We are not in these different situations which require to be a very exalted person. So how can we feel close to these prayers or actually make them part of prayer life? First of all, that the basic way to use them is to recite them. And that we stated is in the Nectar of Devotions, that one who goes before the deity and recites the prayers can become the best of devotees. But as we know, recitation itself, or any devotional act, it has to be done in a certain way. And there's a good hint into this in a purport by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in the Brahma Samhita about the what he calls the hymns, or the prayers of Brahma. Regarding the hymns of Brahma, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati writes, "Readers are requested to study and try to enter the spirit of his hymn with great care and attention as a regular daily function." The key here is to enter the spirit. As they prayed, we may pray. We may pray with them. This is done not by imagining that we are Lord Brahma, but by empathizing with him and with the pastime in which he prayed his hymn. Although we are not as great as those whose prayers are in Srimad Bhagavatam, we are the same in quality as spirit souls. We are also servants of God, and we have the need to worship him and thank him. So if we slowly and carefully recite their prayers, we can benefit. Not by rattling them off with no attempt to make them your own. Now, out of the many different prayers, thousands of shlokas, some of them seem to speak out to us as individuals. They seem to be perfectly addressed to our needs. And I'm going to, in the sixth class, speak on a few that have become my favorites to try to show you what are how you might respond to some and find your favorites. And so actually it's like when you find prayers that you really can pray or enter the spirit of, you feel this is exactly what I would want to say in my prayer, but I'm not eloquent or I'm not able to do it, but he has or she has prayed just the way I want to pray to Krishna. So I can't think of any better way than to express myself. Then I will repeat this. But it has things in it that you really want to say, and at different times different prayers may do that for you. So this is a way to come closer to these Shastric prayers. Practice them, memorize them, live with them, use them in real situations, like you were mentioning the real situation of being harassed on Sankirtan. Surrender to them. It's another way to express it, our appreciation for the stotra that we recite feelingly, is saying that you, whether it's Brahma or Prahlad, you please pray for me. You know the Lord far better than I do. As you asked for forgiveness, or as you praised, or as you requested, let me do also, praying with you in your stotra. And certainly that will be pleasing to Krishna. We come before him with such a recognized prayer, and actually it will please his pure devotees as well. Especially in expressing higher sentiments of pure devotion, such as the love of Radha and Krishna, it wouldn't be possible for us to pray without having Uttama Shlokas, which is so kindly given to us in the scriptures, so that we might recite them and associate with Lord Krishna by Vandanam. There's not things that you can just express by your ordinary experience of devotional service, but to get to that, you need the revelation, the vijnanam, of persons who have spoken in. So the fact that they're more exalted than us, I first mentioned it as a possible reason to feel distant from the prayer. But it's also a reason to go to it and take help. But I can't get that high. I can't pray like that. But if you with your permission, I will say your prayer. I was just reading, meant to bring it here, some of the Stavamala by Rupa Goswami, when he describes himself. There's one poem he says, this poor person in Vrindavan, he describes himself. He says, I when I think of you, I commit offenses, and I only chant sometimes. But I beg you, please be kind, please be kind. Give me direct service. So then he describes what the direct service is that he wants to render to Radha and Krishna. And is praying, please be kind. So how could we approach any sentiment like that except by their assistance? Nectar Devotion says, a devotee should select some of these prayers for his recitation. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are hundreds of prayers to the Lord, so a devotee should select some of these prayers for his recitation. In the Skanda Purana, the glories of these prayers are stated as follows. Devotees whose tongues are decorated always with prayers to Lord Krishna are always given respect, even by the great saintly persons and sages. And such devotees are actually worshipable by the demigods. It's page 84 of Nectar Devotion, if you want to look at it. Although there is by the broad definition I gave in the beginning that we're going to use in this course of prayer, there are many ways to pray. If this were the only way that you were to pray by Shastra, then your prayer life could also be complete, provided you do it entering the spirit in which they were actually composed, empathizing with the person who prayed and putting your own heart into it. Which reminds me, I meant to bring your attention to this. I pointed to it briefly at the beginning. I'd like to look at it a little more now. This phrase from Gajendra's prayer. So when Gajendra began to pray, his state is described in these lines, and they really say a lot. Samadaya manorini. Samadaya is like samadhi. We know samadhi, the yogic trance of complete concentration. And then mano means mind and riddhi means heart. So this, when you pray, when you, as I said, break through the material coverings and enter a state of prayer, it should be concentration, not just reciting words and not listening to them. That is not at all even prayer. But first your mind is attentive to what you're doing, and then even further, mind is, we say, in the sort of intellectual absorption, but then the mind is placed in the heart, and there's complete samadhi, all the feelings, and wholeheartedness. So that was a nice description of Gajendra. Gajendra fixed his mind in his heart with perfect intelligence and chanted a mantra. So when you're chanting a mantra or when you're reading Shastra, all these things should be samadaya manoriti. And if we can't do that, there's so many things in Krishna consciousness we say should be this, should be that. But then we may have to pray for that. Pray to pray. So I want to bring out different things each day, but I think I'll stop for now. And it's quite early, actually. We can discuss more things. Girunaga?
Yes. You were talking about Shastra prayers and how there's different kinds of Shastra prayers. So if one my question is should one go to like a Shastric prayer to elicit a certain type of effect from Krishna? In other words, say one wants forgiveness, or say one wants to cut, or say one wants to cut off his family attachment. Should one go to, like, say, prayers of Queen Kunti and start praying them? And do the prayers from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Shastric prayers, do they have these kind of, if you pray them, will you get the effect? Do they have, like, that kind of power?
First of all, anything I say is not that I'm holding this course as a master of prayer. I'm only a beginner. I don't have such wisdom about it. But I'll try to answer however as best I can.
One other thing I wanted to ask, I'm sorry, but should we calculate like this before praying?
Well, inevitably there's some kind of calculation. It's not necessarily a nasty word, but if you want to do something, you want it to be effective. If you approach a spiritual master, you have to examine him. Before you have faith in the Shastras, you want to know, what are these books? But it shouldn't. We shouldn't do things with the as far as possible with the akama spirit, or we'll regret, like Dhruva Maharaj afterwards. If we have, if by calculate we mean material desires through prayers, that would be not good. And Krishna will give us what we ask for, perhaps in prayer. There's a nice statement of purport by Prabhupada in the Dhruva section where he says the devotees should be very careful that they don't ask for material desires, or like Dhruva Maharaj, they will be very regretful, which implies that there is potency in a devotional life, and what you think of, you'll get. In a BTG article, I quoted one line by Teresa of Avila, said there are more tears shed by people who get what they ask for in prayer than by people who don't get what they ask for. So if you pray for the wrong thing and you get it, then you'll be sorry. You know, you pray for a beautiful wife, or you pray to be rich, but then there are so many bad things that come with that. Or like Dhruva Maharaj, I missed you, you're the real riches, you're the wealth, and instead I got some land and power by my prayers. So, but you said, should we think that there's potency? Yes, of course they are, but they're not like magic formulas. Remember Shazam? the comic books? What was that? Somebody would say Shazam. When he was in trouble, he would say Shazam! And the god, his god, would give him power right away. Certain word formulas like open sesame. I think Ravindra Sarup Prabhu will be discussing that kind of potency. He told me a little bit about this concept of riddles. He's going to talk about the 10 riddles. And he was talking about different cultures which also teach about riddles and how there are certain words, and if you say them, then something happens. Just by the potency of the riddle. If you know the riddle, then something happens. So we don't want to think of prayers like that, that just by putting it together, then you get your wish. Because it wouldn't take really devotion to figure that out. It might just take some cleverness. So they're potent, but you have to enter the spirit of them, and then they're so potent that you can see Krishna, or you can attain love of Krishna by reciting Srinivatan Svakata Krishna. This is merging a little bit. Of course, these things are all going to overlap. But I'm going to talk about reading the Shastra, not just reading stotras, but about how to read in a prayerful way. And actually, when you do that, Krishna is right there speaking to you. But for now, just say, yes, it's potent. They work. That depends on how you approach Krishna, too. Someone else was going to say something about this? All right. Yes.
One comment and have a question. Haridasa Thakur also makes the same caution in chanting the holy name. He says it's Chintamani. So if you're chanting with a material desire, then the holy name will reward material desires. So therefore, be careful to be non-included in chanting. My question is, the Shastric prayers are written, are spoken by a particular devotee in dealing with a particular situation. And while there are many similarities to a mood that we may have or a feeling we may want to express, there's not so many, there's not absolute similarity, and also different, say, more subtle nuances that are true for you. You don't know if it's necessarily true for the personality expressing that prayer. So can, when we choose prayers and we recite prayers, do we just assume that, well, Krishna knows my heart also, and therefore I'm, you know, I was a, Brahma was asking forgiveness for a particular thing, he was thinking he's the controller, but he was a huge controller. But maybe what I'm asking forgiveness for, you can stretch it and say that, well, maybe I was thinking I was the controller, because I wasn't really, but I... He was asking for such nice forgiveness that I'm attracted to using the prayer. So, is it, what's the leeway in adopting Shastra prayers?
Well, one answer I would give briefly, and then discuss it more at length tomorrow, would be that you're going to want to sometimes speak for yourself because of that, what you were saying, the exact application may... not be there. So, but as far as going to the Shastric prayer, it seems to me that there are times and there are prayers that are perfect, and you can say them. Although it's different, it's not. Krishna knows that. Oh, he's saying Lord Brahma's prayer. He's not Lord Brahma, but he feels that same mood which Brahma long ago recited. Now he feels, as another conditioned soul, that he's also presumptuous. Krishna will understand, but you should understand what it's good that you brought it up. You should understand too that it's not that you're not Brahma, or you're not the person praying exactly. So you don't fall into some imitation. Because the prayers are so exalted, we don't want to think that by reciting them automatically I have attained all these emotions or realizations.
Like you said earlier, the Krishna is praying through that person.
Yeah.
You said that like when Brahma's prayers are by Krishna's mercy. So Krishna's making this obvious for us to repeat. It's there for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously,
like what he said,
the way he powered down, just
to repeat it.
Yes. That's a nice point. One example, I'd like to respond to Lord's question. These words that you wrote on the board, that's very significant in the Gajendra's prayers. He was praying the same as Gajendra as he was praying as King Indudumna. But as King Indudumna, he hadn't, using the term as you said, broken through the layers of covering. In other words, when he was in completely feelingly praying the same structure he did as the king, at the end he kind of did his personal prayer ad lib at the end. He was reciting the stotra and so feelingly recited it.
When he had said his previous life.
So many times over.
Yeah.
He feelingly said it. And then at the end, he went beyond the stotra and said, actually, I don't want anything, but I know because I'm your devotee, you'll save me. So now what I really want is your service on me. After you've done with saving me, the business of saving me.
Yeah.
That's a nice thing. The three words you put there. Was going to ask something about that, but his question not the answer to your question.
But you brought up a good point that he said the same prayers, but the second life, he was much more intent and went even further. And we take it that he pleased Krishna more. He was more serious, which is kind of what merely what Bhadak was inquiring into, in different ways of...
the personal side of it became manifest through the prayer. It's,
Lord Brahma's prayers, and which we can demonstrate how glorious they are, the prayers in the 14th chapter, 10th canto, he asks forgiveness for stealing the cows and calves, and then he starts to glorify Vrindavan. And that glorification of Vrindavan by an outsider is so wonderful that in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, when Sanatana Goswami wants to express the peak of the essence of what Vrindavan is, he starts quoting Brahma's prayers because he's done such an excellent job of appreciating it, although he couldn't attain it. And yet, so that's how glorious those prayers are. But when they were over, it appeared that Lord Krishna wasn't very impressed. And Lord Brahma didn't know what he thought, he was so grave, and then didn't say anything. And so Brahma then excused himself. So you can't be presumptuous about what that was, that exchange between Krishna and Brahma, and why Krishna wasn't moved by those prayers. But at least it makes us think about this, that it's not just the Sanskrit or the eloquence, but it's what actually moves Krishna. And the prayers are judged by Krishna's being pleased by them. That we have to understand from him what is that essence. But you could see it in this, as Rupad Maharaj mentioned, that's an example of how we can see it. I always like to think of the example of the difference between Maharaj Bharat in his previous lives and then when he became Yad Bharat. That expression we have, no-nonsense, somebody's no-nonsense. That's like he was the last word in a no-nonsense person, Yad Bharat. It's like he wasn't going to do anything that broke his meditation on Krishna, even to the point where he let everybody think he was a crazy fool and let them abuse him in every way. He just didn't want to be disturbed from thinking of Krishna. So that was because he had done everything right as Maharaj Bharat, but perfection is so difficult, it can slip away from you at the end by getting attached to a fawn or deer. Is a similar example. So the next life, well, first he had to do the life as a fawn, or as a stag. That was a very unusual life of being near the sadhus. But then when he got the human form of life, he wasn't just another Brahmin, but he was most determined. So that quality, whether it's sincerity or determination, it's what makes the difference between recitation without realization and prayer. Anyone else?
Items like concentration, meditation, Manasa Puja, things like that fall within Vandana, or is that in a different category?
No, they all sound... it depends on what you mean by contemplation, meditation. Those words have been used in very different ways. But what we're talking about is a very personal thing between the devotee and the Supreme Lord. Sometimes meditation is not like that. But if you mean by that like deeper states of thinking of Krishna and using the mind to serve Krishna, that's part of prayer. But prayer has to exist isolated from activity. So after expressing desires to the Lord, then the devotee acts on those desires too, if he can. Uh, But those things that you mentioned are also part of what we're talking about. That we're talking about how in whatever you do, there should be a life within, which is like a prayer to Krishna, and is the and without that, the thing can become a hollow shell. So it's a very important thing to have a life of a relationship with Krishna that is a real thing, and that you're always calling to Krishna through that, whatever name you call it exactly. All right, I think I'll just let Mili Bhattika.
One question I had was, when the Shastra prayers are offered, it's usually an extended prayer. It's not just thank you, Lord, but it's usually extended prayer. So are we to, or can we examine that and find a particular structure that is applicable in praying, that is a particular way of approaching the Lord, regardless of whether you're requesting or asking forgiveness? And for example, first some praise is offered.
Yeah. I seem to have a vague memory of some purport where Prabhupada may mention that from both sides, that it's natural after praising the Lord or making philosophical descriptions of Him, learned descriptions, the devotee may ask some request, recognition that's part of the structure of some prayers. And the other part should be recognized too, that you don't just come out right away that I want this, I want that, but you're coming into the presence of Krishna and you sincerely want to glorify Him. Sometimes it's obvious that there's an urgent need, that they're praying with some urgent need, but as soon as they start to talk to Krishna, it's like they can't help themselves, they just start praising Him. And you say, when is he going to ask for help? But they just go on and on, and then maybe two shlokas they say, and by the way, help! So there does seem to be that kind of structure, that Uttama shloka, to be beautiful, it is full of praises of the Lord before there's any requests. Even Uttara's prayer in about two verses is very wonderful, like that, calling Krishna the Lord of Lords and who can free us from death. And then specifically, please help me, this Brahmastra is coming at me. All right, thank you. All glories to Prabhupada. Thank you.